The trail junction was shaded by a row of trees and tall brush. The slim young man lay with his legs in the shade. His jaw was in his throat. His one eye was shut, and the other was a star-shaped hole. Kiowa glanced at the body. "All right, let me ask a question," he said. "You want to trade places with him? Turn it all upside down? You want that? I mean, be honest." The star-shaped hole was red and yellow. The yellow part seemed to be getting wider, spreading out at the center of the star. The upper lip and gum and teeth were gone. The man's head was cocked at a wrong angle, as if loose at the neck, and the neck was wet with blood. "Think it over," Kiowa said. Then later he said, "Tim, it's a war. The guy wasn't Heidi. He had a weapon, right? It's a tough thing for sure, but you got to cut out that staring." Then he said, "Maybe you better lie down a minute." Then after a long empty time, he said, "Take it slow. Just go wherever the spirit takes you." The butterfly was making its way along the young man's forehead, which was spotted with small dark freckles. The nose was undamaged. The skin on the right cheek was smooth and fine-grained and hairless. Frail-looking, delicately boned, the young man wouldn't have wanted to be a soldier, and in his heart would have feared performing badly in battle. Even as a boy growing up in the village of Mikkei, he had often worried about this. He imagined covering up his head and lying in a deep hole and closing his eyes and not moving until the war was over. He had no stomach for violence. He loved mathematics. His eyebrows were thin and arched like a woman's, and at school the boys sometimes teased him about how pretty he was, the arched eyebrows and long, shapely fingers, and on the playground they mimicked a woman's walk and made fun of his smooth skin and his love for mathematics. The young man couldn't make himself fight them. He often wanted to, but he was afraid, and this increased his shame. If he could not fight little boys, he thought, how could he ever become a soldier and fight the Americans with their airplanes and helicopters and bombs? It didn't seem possible. In the presence of his father and uncles, he pretended to look forward to doing his patriotic duty, which was also a privilege. But at night, he prayed with his mother that the war might end soon. Beyond anything else, he was afraid of disgracing himself and therefore his family and village. But all he could do, he thought, was wait and pray and try not to grow up too fast. "Listen to me," Kiowa said. "You feel terrible, I know that." Then he said, "Okay, maybe I don't know." Along the trail there were small blue flowers, shaped like bells. The young man's head was wrenched sideways, not quite facing the flowers, and even in the shade a single blade of sunlight sparkled against the buckle of his ammunition belt. The left cheek was peeled back in three ragged strips. The wounds at his neck hadn't yet clotted, which made him seem animate, even in death, the blood still spreading out across his shirt. Kiowa shook his head. There was some silence before he said, "Stop staring." The young man's fingernails were clean. There was a slight tear at the lobe of one ear, a sprinkling of blood on the forearm. He wore a gold ring on the third finger of his right hand. His chest was sunken and poorly muscled, a scholar maybe. His life was now a constellation of possibilities. So, yes, maybe a scholar. And for years, despite his family's poverty, the man I killed would have been determined to continue his education in mathematics. The means for this were arranged perhaps through the village liberation cadres. And in 1964, the young man began attending classes at the university in Saigon, where he avoided politics and paid attention to the problems of calculus. He devoted himself to his studies. He spent his nights alone, wrote romantic poems in his journal, took pleasure in the grace and beauty of differential equations. The war, he knew, would finally take him, but for the time being, he wouldn't let himself think about it. He'd stopped praying. Instead, now, he waited. And as he waited, in his final year at the university, he fell in love with a classmate, a girl of 17, who one day told him that his wrists were like the wrists of a child. So small and delicate, and who admired his narrow waist and the cowlick that rose up like a bird's tail at the back of his head. She liked his quiet manner. She laughed at his freckles and bony legs. One evening, perhaps, they exchanged gold rings.